podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's morning, but I'll be muted.
That's Red Steve. We're not on mute, Andy, so we can still do it. We can say whatever we want, and nobody pays attention, so it's all grand. Good evening. Welcome along to the forum. I am your host, Phil Casey, and I'm celebrating the start of the real football season as the NFL kicks into gear this weekend. Tonight on the show, we're going to be dealing with the four topics as ever, and I'm going to be looking at something that I don't look at too often, which is the Liverpool-Nike deal. You'll all be happy to hear about that. Following that, Andy is going to be dealing with social media, and after that then, Pete, if he turns up, we'll be talking something about TV coverage. It's the bizarrest topic ever, to be totally honest with you. I have no idea what he's on about, so hopefully he'll turn up in time to discuss it. And then finally, we'll finally look at Ray Ron Dicko Dickinson is going to be on talking about queuing to get into Anfield and all the moany people who are moaning about queuing to get into Anfield, right? And to be fair, let's be honest about it, Andy will be not moaning about it because Andy is an FSG man. So without further ado, let me introduce you to the guests. You've heard me all mention their names. I may as well bring them up on screen. There we are in the box beside me to the left-hand side, of course. Which way does this work now? It's like you're going off. It's the opposite the way it was. So there's Andy up there, and there's Raymond down there. And you'll see Pete just over there. Pete's lights aren't working at the moment, so he'll be on soon.
Phil, just Red Steve says we weren't on mute, so we can do the singing in the intro.
We can do the singing. You'll be delighted to know all our friends and people are out there. We'll be able to do the singing for you in future.
And the director isn't on mute either, so we can hear his TV too.
We can hear you. When the director comes off mute, you'll be able to hear him watching Coronation Street because he's not an EastEnders man at all. I just want to say hello to everyone along. We see us all in the chats, and it's great to have us on the chats. We're paying attention to your comments as we go along. Says, or Alison, whoever you are, the pictures certainly don't help people with epilepsy. That's unfortunate. Right, so on to the first topic. It is, of course, the Nike and the LFC football deal. On the week that the season starts, where we announced a new sponsorship with Sonos speakers, which I was using earlier on to have a bit of team music going on for the lads, I said, it's time to go back. Looking at a PSG and looking at the Messi deal and looking at all the type of stuff, let's have a look at this deal because it was revolutionary. It should generate lots of money for us. Everyone's moaning we don't have money to spend on transfers and Mbappes and all these type of people. And yet, you look at it, and the people who have exploited a kit deal the best so far are PSG. As much as we look at these lads that are running the PSG sort of money wagon, they've gotten the Air Jordan thing on board. They have so many celebrity fans. They've had so many celebrities wear the gear. They've done collabs with a load of different French designers. They've been appeared on Paris Fashion Week, and they've done everything with it. And it's brought me back to think, outside of LeBron in a Liverpool kit, who has pushed the Liverpool gear outside of what we as Liverpool fans see on the Liverpool feeds? Right, lads, this is what I want to know. And could the club be maximising this deal a lot more intelligently in terms of using the celebrity power that they said they were going, that Nike said they were going to use in winning that in the courtroom when they were winning this deal? So, Andy, and this is not to say that this is, I'm not getting at Nike. I think actually, and the reason I brought this up is I actually looked at Klopp's gear at the weekend, and I thought some of this outside of the joint swoosh that's on the back of the gear, I was there going, this is some of the best looking coaching kit, training kit, and leisure wear that they brought out in a long time. So this is what's led me to bring it in and just throw something different out to open up this week's topics as opposed to just focusing exclusively on transfers and football. So, Andy, could we be doing better merchandising this and turning this into the idea of a global brand, that Liverpool isn't just a football team, it becomes a global sports brand as such?
Yeah, you would have thought when they were trying to trademark the Liverboard that was the angle they were going with, that all of a sudden we're going to see the Liverboard being a, a real emblem of the brand, of the Nike brand, and it hasn't really panned out that way. PSG, they're right, they're the only club to have different gear. Everybody else's gear is kind of the same design, but with a different colour scheme. Some of their gear is brilliant. The colours flashing across and how different they change up in a way kit with Air Jordan and everything else. But look, we won't know. We won't really know what sort of money this stuff was bringing in until we see kind of the full year of these accounts when we're through COVID and everything else. I would imagine Liverpool kind of markets itself to a certain extent, whereas PSG, although it's Paris, they wouldn't have the same level of support around the world. So maybe it's just a different strategy like that. We won't really know till a couple of years into this deal. But no, I totally get what you're saying. What PSG are doing looks totally different. It looks slicker, and it's one of the clubs that you would be tempted to buy a bit of gear off and go around, and it looks well. But I think Liverpool are doing a pretty good job so far. You know,
okay. I want to take your point, Danny, because this is where I slightly disagree with you, because PSG in the last 3 years have become recognised as a global footballing brand. Okay, the idea of the PSG logo, Gavin, in the bracket, will you throw up just this type of stuff here, where we have Kylian Mbappe wearing what is the Air Jordan logoed stuff from a PSG kit, right? Completely different to what you're seeing out there, and it breaks the boundaries between, say, football jersey and something that you see musicians. You're seeing celebrities wearing just randomly, whether it's in a crowd or not. They've gone out and they've gone to attract big names into their ground to get them wearing this type of merchandise. So without having to pay, you know, what do they call those people who are on Instagram, those influencers or whatever it is, without having to pay these guys, they basically are getting that brand that's out there. And straight away, people are instantly recognizing that this is PSG. This is who they are. And like you say, people already know the Liverpool brand. We know it because we're fans. Anyone that's a football fan knows it. But this is breaking the idea of football. Like, if you think about it, basketball before Jordan arrives is very much a niche sport. And after Jordan arrives, it becomes a fashion brand. It's a sports brand that's there. Gav, just throw up the... I just want to give you an idea of some of the collabs. Will you throw up the vest? The types of the stuff that's there, the basketball basketball vest there for Paris that they're lashing out in terms of the brand that we have, when you get a chance. And it's just something I'm saying to myself, right, this type of stuff here, you see this Paris 23 and Mbappe 23, right? Surely with the guys we have like Salah and that, you know, that global presence already for these guys, being able to do this type of crossover would be huge. No? Ray?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, what are we, we're in the, is it the second year now? I'm losing track of this. Is it the second year of the deal? It's a 5-year deal. Who knows what the plan is in terms of those 5 years? Maybe they've decided that for the first couple of years that they'll kind of ease the way into a more kind of traditional approach. Later on in the cycle, they'll introduce some of these types of things to try and kind of, you know, what they hopefully expect. I mean, my you say about promoting the kit, I mean, the thing that I found quite funny when I bought my first Nike kit last season, I went with the Allison black jersey, and then quickly found that Zenit St. Petersburg were promoting the kit because they had exactly the same goalkeeper kit for themselves. so that was a nice little bit of promotion out there in Russia. But in all seriousness, I mean, will we ever get to know what the detail is behind the actual contract that was signed? You know, was this a sales pitch by Nike at the time to win that deal? To say that these are the, you know, when they were up there and they were saying, this is how we can grow your brand, this is how we can, you know, there's obviously the percentage, I think it's 20% of sales. So this is how we will grow your brand. And this is how we will translate this into actual, you know, pounds at the end of the day by bringing in these kind of, you know, famous sports stars to grow the Liverpool, the LFC brand. But was there actual, be interesting, and as I say, we'll probably never find out, was there any actual commitment in that contract to say that, you know, a Serena Williams or a LeBron will actually do that for them? You know, was this just a suggestion? I would imagine it probably was a bit of a sales trick to get some people thinking, well, actually, if we can go along the same lines of what they've said, as, you know, using PSG potentially as some kind of case study or whatever, is this something that we can sort of jump on the bandwagon with, and maybe they will, but look, we're only in year two, so I guess it's a little bit too early to judge.
Okay, the reason why this jumped out at me, it's not so much me bashing the Nike deal. I think the Nike deal is brilliant, right? But I think it needs to be exploited to really maximize the value. And I think the club needs to drive, they can drive it through Nike. But if you think about it, the idea here is that we get a bigger percentage of whatever the merchandise and the kits that we sell globally, right? So it's in our interest to really be driving that and into the markets that we aren't necessarily a premium sport. So the American market is the obvious example. It's not so much about saying, are we going? Like, I see people saying, oh, PSG are a crap club, and PSG are this and that. But what they're doing is they're creating a brand awareness which goes past the sport itself and just becomes a fashion brand. Somebody mentioned the Air Max collection, which looks great in terms of what's there. But that was it. We saw a couple of pictures on Twitter. We saw a couple of pictures on Instagram that the club shop put out. You don't see a Drake wearing the gear in a gig or in a video. You don't see people just sporting this gear, you know, in the type of stuff that's going on. And the big selling point in this was that exact thing that you said, Ray. The big thing that won over the judge in this case was that Nike had this star power that New Balance couldn't bring to the deal and could never match. And that's why the Nike deal couldn't be bettered by New Balance, and New Balance couldn't execute their part of their contract. So, you know, I just think we've made such a big leap forward that it'd be an awful shame to waste this opportunity. Sorry, Andy.
I think that celebrity reach, though, was a counter argument to a point that New Balance made in the court case. Nike's whole thing was built around the spaces that they could get the Liverpool brand into. Because if you remember when Liverpool departed from Adidas, Adidas were pushing Real Madrid, I can't remember at the time, but probably Chelsea and other clubs all over Asia. And Liverpool couldn't get their brand into airports and in China and all over the place. And that was one of the downfalls, where they match up with Nike. They can do all that for them, no problem. And look, as Ray says, you won't know the finer details of what was agreed and the strategy and approach that they went with. But it's totally different. Like, Liverpool are Nike's flagship club now in the Premier League. And they're just replacing, you know, the space that Man United filled for such a long time. It probably doesn't require this sort of effort with PSG. And it's going to devalue PSG's product if Nike are doing that across all our football clubs. So the strategy is going to be different, isn't it, really? And if you do see some of the gear that they're bringing out, like that baseball type of jersey, they are trying different things. And look, I don't know who was wearing it, but I have seen it being worn by celebs on different platforms. One design that Liverpool are exclusively using is that one that kind of looks a bit like Louis Vuitton. It's like the Shankly Gates embroidered into the background. And that sort of stuff is kind of our thing and not others. So, look, as I said, time will tell whether they're maximising their this sort of thing where we're going to be pushing to get 20% or whatever it is of the net profits. Contract isn't being fulfilled as agreed, then that's for the club to kind of fight, isn't it?
Just on the actual kits, though, I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say that the new home kit looks pretty decent. And
on television.
Yeah. And by all accounts, what I've heard is the away kits, the sort of the cream kit that's already out, is in terms of its sales, are running at the levels that you would normally associate with a home kit. So that's been an absolute, you know, rip-roaring success. The third kit, which is due out in a few weeks, is a sort of more traditional kind of yellow kit. Now, you know, again, conversations I've had, they're not expecting that yellow kit to sell anywhere close to as well. Yellow, apparently, you know, it doesn't sell. It's just not kind of as fashionable to go out there and wear in the street or down the pub or whatever. So they're not expecting huge things out of that third kit. But yeah, I mean, you know, I was a little bit underwhelmed by last season's selection of kits. I do like what I've seen so far this season. Are we about to get Pete? He seems to have.
I don't know. He must have been able to find his key for his hotel room.
I just haven't found the
light. You know when you come into a hotel room locked and you open the door and you can't find the slot to put the key in, and you just end up peeing in the bath. Like, do you know what I mean? Because you can't find the lights for the toilet. That's where Pete is the moment. So Pete, when you find the place to put your card in, you're welcome to join us. Can I just ask Ray on this, right? I don't labour to. I just think it's. I just don't hope we don't miss an opportunity. Gav, you don't have any of those pictures of the stuff that Andy was talking about in terms of the background decoration that's on the Nike gear and the black jacket that Klopp was wearing at the thing. The one thing I did notice is that we have some type of specialist brand or collaboration with 47, the baseball hat makers, and that's why Klopp is wearing all those different types of baseball hats. Now, I tell you one thing, they're not cheap. I think there's something like 35 sterling or 42 sterling for one of the hats that are going on in the club. And then if you throw on the extra VAT that you're going to have to pay if you're in the EU, it's a... You won't be buying much out of the club shop, I'll tell you that, unless they open an EU shop, because there's not a hope in hell that they're going to struggle to sell that stuff into the Europe with the extra VAT that's going on. But outside of that, coming back to ourselves, right, in terms of if you could pick one celebrity to endorse us to really give us that global reach, because like with the PSG thing's going to explode more, with Messi gone there selling jerseys, Neymar selling jerseys, you've got Mbappe selling jerseys, like it's just going to explode in terms of a brand, and it's like an unstoppable train. It's the one thing I'd say about PSG, your man who owns them is on the FFP, is the chief executive of the FFP board in UEFA, so if anybody thinks that they're ever going to get done for FFP, there's not a hope that's going to happen. But I'd say now your man who owns City is just sitting there going, how the fuck did your man do that at Paris Saint-Germain? Like, how is this going on? They're just getting away with everything that's going on. It's outrageous. But you just have this battle. They're talking about I think City are trying to push Puma to sell more kits or whatever it is. Anyway, the point I want to get back to is LeBron. Is LeBron a potential blocker for us being able to use the Air Jordan stuff? Because in my head, when we signed the Nike deal, I thought the most perfect collaboration was Air Jordan, because the traditional colours of the Air Jordan stuff is red, white and black, right? And you look at all the kits that we've been doing lately, there's some combination of red, white and black through the kits, be it New Balance or the Nike kits that came out. And you look at this here, one of the jackets that we've shown up in terms of, now I don't know about that red swoosh at the back, but I love that. I love the purity that's in there. You could see that now on MTV or whatever the kids watch these days. What do they watch these days, Andy? You're down with the kids. What do they watch?
Am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
No idea, but yeah, I get the point. It's
I'll give you a bit of advice. Get yourself down to the club shop next May and pick up one of those for 15 quid.
I remember picking up something as ridiculous. You might remember, Ray, when we went to the new camp and I can't remember where you and Mick went to kind of the gods, didn't you? So where the Liverpool fans were.
Yeah.
And me and Darren, wasn't it, went to behind the goal in the Barcelona
in the section. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We went into the Barca Cup and I had to buy some Barca gear and I bought the most loud, ridiculous Barca Nike jacket that was a bit like that. I don't really remember. It was like practically a big loud
fluorescent yellow, was it?
No, not fluorescent yellow. It was like fluorescent kind of you know, the red colour that goes through their jersey, except it was like ridiculous fluorescent sort of. And I sat there wearing that thing. So that kind of just reminds me of the type of gear that Nike bring out. It's always that bit louder.
It is. Now, I don't know if Pete's going to join us tonight at this rate, so I'm not going to harbour too much on it. But the last thing, lads, if you think about it, and Chris Brack says, right, they watch YouTube and TikTok allegedly, so that's what the kids do be watching these days. It's like when I went looking for MTV on the channels there recently, and look, all the MTV channels that used to be there are gone. they're not all the music channels are gone. It's just all sort of reality TV crap that they have on instead. Last bit, like
that's just changed again. I thought that was P coming in.
Yeah, no, it's just maybe that is P. Like,
I think you were going to ask us the one person, weren't you, Phil? Do you know the first person who popped into my head? I don't know why. I've no idea why. Tom Daly. Don't know why.
The diver.
Yeah. I've no idea why.
How much have you had to drink?
What about that fella that throws the ball in American football? Tom
Brady.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. That's
the name we were always thinking
of. That'd be a better Tom.
Tom. he's actually an Under Armour athlete. So there we go. Yeah, that might knock the whole Nike
thing. Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, that would be a good show. Good show, yeah.
I don't even know, do they have
actors these days?
I'm very surprised based on previous podcasts that no one is throwing some pretty decent shouts in here for the one person who's gonna sell this brand.
I don't know who can sell us in the States better than, like, they're all saying Jordan is its own thing. LeBron is sponsored by Jordan. Is not sponsored by Jordan. No, he's sponsored. LeBron has his own version of a label. Tom Selleck is a great show. Pete's doing a strip on the balcony for the crowds and
how do people off that spur? Of course he'd say that, all right.
Shane Downs, that's actually a good show. Lamar Jackson could definitely crack the American market. Gav, the one thing, the reason why I'm probably asking these questions, Gav, throw up my last graphic there, which is very important to the Nike and LFC thing, is to do with the difference between English people and American people. Chuck it up there.
I'm dying to see how you make this make sense.
It does make sense because, like, Gav, will you put up the graphic there, please?
Roshan.
Oh, there we go. So, like, this can't be hard to crack because look at these mad American people, right? They reckon, if you look at them, Americans are ultimately confident at doing anything better than everybody else. So you have Americans here who believe, like, there's one in 10 Americans believe that they could beat a crocodile in a fight. Like, this is madness, right? But the bit that I can get over is 1 in 3 Americans believe that they could kill an eagle in a fight. Like, do they know how big one eagles are and how big their claws are? Like, this type of market should be easy. And they can fly, yeah. They could come down, grab you and attack you. Like, have these people even seen a rat? Like, think about this, right? Everyone thinks to be really good against the rat, but rats, like, they aren't humans. They're just going to go straight for you, and they're just going to bite everywhere they possibly can. And the only thing you can do is grab one and throw it away. Have you ever tried to grab a rat? Fucking slippery bastards. It's not that simple. Right, like, on this is how stupid Americans are. We should be able to sell jerseys by the bucket loads to these lads. Now, can I ask you a question? You're an English person, right? Mm. Which one of these animals would you have been able to take yourself? I just want to see where you rate on this scale. Would you be confident taking a rat?
If I had a baseball bat, yeah, I suppose.
No. This is a bare knuckle fight now.
Okay, fair enough.
there he is. Oh, my God.
Pete, is that actually you, or has Gav just put a picture of Pete up there? Instead of he's alive.
It's a normal picture.
He's no sound though. It's grand. Just
stay there. You'd be grand.
Just wait till your sound turns on. It'd be grand. What do you reckon, Ray? So I'm gonna.
How low down the scale, so to speak, would I go? I probably wouldn't go beyond the goose, to be honest with you.
I think a goose would be okay. Andy, where would you go to?
I mean, I'd have to stop a large dog. That's my worst nightmare. Imagine a large dog attacking you. Fuck that.
Yeah.
That, like, one of those big Rottweilers or something that's minding a scrapyard, you know, them big ones. Imagine getting on the wrong side of the fence, you know, and there's one of those.
The heads really scared the bejesus out of me. You know those American pit bulls, you know, the ones that have, like, the heads that are designed for fighting, like, even if that's the happiest dog in the world, they've scared the bejesus out of me, right? But lads, like, 8 Americans in 10 believe they can beat an elephant in a fight. Like, these are that's essentially 1 in 10 people in America reckon they could beat an elephant in a fight. You've got the same amount reckon they could beat a lion in a fight. Pete, do you reckon? Can you give me logic as to why 1 in 10 Americans believe they can beat a lion in a fight?
I think, you know, these are people that believe, you know, if you go back in history, like Orson Welles, when he did his War of the Worlds launch, he did it as a radio, false radio broadcast, and a load of Americans went and killed themselves because they thought actual Martians were attacking them. So nothing surprises me with these people, to be quite honest. But great crack. We love Avi. We love United States. But, you know, they're not the smartest.
But I think it's would this be a good way to sell? Would this be a good way to sell the gear in America? We could sponsor, like, we could have a fight. It could be like a reality TV show. As you go each week, you go down an animal, right? Now, obviously, you don't want cruelty to animals or anything like that, which would be terrible and all. But you don't want cruelty to humans. But like, if you had found somebody who'd be prepared to take on a chimpanzee, would you let them fight? Like, have they not seen those programs where the chimpanzees have attacked humans and basically bitten the face off them? Like, I don't know. It's a bizarre, strange world. And on that, Pete, welcome along to the show. Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Humble apologies. I'm in Malaga and you're just walking away, and it was just impossible to even get through the here. By the way, everybody in Spain has decided to descend upon Andalusia. It's a bank holiday here, so it's impossible to.
That's
good
fair
stuff.
Enough.
Good stuff.
Someone's saying in the comments, can we not avoid them when we start talking about football? How long have you been watching this podcast?
Anybody that's been listening or watching to the Trippers podcast since 2013 would be aware that nearly every week when we used to do Trippers chats, somebody would ask us, what animal do you think we could take on? Who would we be? 100 ducks or 1 massive duck or like a 10,000 mini horses or a horse? So this finally they went. And what I think is the most interesting bit of this, Andy, is that this is a YouGov poll in the UK. This isn't even like, you know, like a Daily Mail poll or something like this. Mm. Somebody commissioned this out of the money to go off and ask these questions.
It's not mad that people have jobs like that.
Imagine ringing.
You know, I always wonder, like, people I know are electricians and they work on banks and stuff. Like, who does this? It's amazing. Like, how do you?
Okay, can I explain, Andy? Let me explain. There's a company.
That was Grant.
I totally get it now. Oh, thanks for that, Pete. Fucking hell, if you hadn't told me that, you'd be like,
the one thing anyone knows that have been in the hotel, you can't do streaming in a hotel, lads. Like, the contention rate and the speed is just not strong enough. Right, we're going to move on to our next topic. So, Gav, I think what's our next topic?
Probably Pete, is it?
I think it might have been Pete. No, we're going to social media madness. So, right, after that serious topic around football jerseys and animal baiting, we're on to Andy's social media madness. So, Andy, take us through this. What do you want to talk to us after that?
I don't ever remember telling Gav it was social media madness, but And get ready for another topic, not about football. It often occurs to me that most of the topics we pick here stems from a complaint on Twitter, like someone's complaining about something. And we end up complaining about complaining, you know what I mean? So what's the point in Twitter sorry, I've totally lost my train of thought there. Well, anyway, look, Twitter at the moment, it just seems to be dominated by all this kind of toxicity. It seems to be got a lot worse than it ever was. So, look, I thought it'd be an interesting discussion around, you know, is it time to just quit it? Like, we've got, you know, our own few trippers that you had your sabbatical away from Twitter, Phil. I know Keith has gone off Twitter, you know, so do the negatives outweigh the positives? Is it time to just get off it? You know, if it's wrecking your head that much. Sean, there's another one who's not on Twitter at the moment. So I wanted to just talk about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The ugly one is easy, you know, and it's all the really bad shit, the, you know, racism and homophobia and everything else and all the conspiracy theorists and all the lunatics. But you can block all those, no problem. You can use certain tools on Twitter and block certain words and everything else. But the rats come up out of the sewers every so often, the feed. The bad is a bit more tricky. You know, I get as much fun out of all them, you know, how people are, as much as they annoy me, you know. It's like an itch, you know, it's such a relief to scratch it. Look, when you look at FSG, Otis, and people are our own fans that hate our own players, and then all the lunatics, the anti-vaxxers. So there's a lot of fun to be had, but sometimes, you know, it just gets a bit much. And then the good, this is what makes the decision hard. You know, we've all built up a really good network of top Reds, and there's some amazing accounts that share like fan moments, you know, home and away. You get the instant live, you know, things as they're happening, you know, and then there's other topics like golf and whatever else you're into that are far less toxic. So in summary, I don't think I could quit it. I was never an advocate for blocking because I kind of like to hear the other side. You know, an echo chamber isn't really healthy when you're kind of debating topics on Twitter. But the world has just become a la-la land in the last 2 or 3 years. Maybe a happy, clappy little echo chamber is better. Just we're experiencing a kind of a golden era in supporting Liverpool and all these wardrobe dwelling, nappy wearing, barbecue, hoop eatings, crayon smugglers want to ruin the buzz. So what do you reckon? Did the positives on Twitter outweigh the negatives?
Well, look, I mean, from my perspective, I don't take it overly serious, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm probably fairly late adopter to getting onto Twitter. And, like, I've never blocked anyone. Like, I'm more than happy to read through, like, whatever shite comes up on my timeline, to be honest with you. Like, I don't take it seriously at all. Like, it is not real life. And I like, that's the level that I go onto it and start reading stuff, you know what I mean? And the only person who's ever blocked me is Grizz, but, you know, that's Grizz for you. Like, I've seriously never been blocked by anyone else, so I've clearly not offended anyone else. So maybe I'm not using it right. Maybe I'm not actually getting the full benefit of going on there. But, like, I totally get what you mean in terms of, like, is it got now to the point, like, where it's kind of got, like, counterproductive at this stage? Because the one thing that really does piss me off is when people get on our players' backs. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the one thing that really pisses me off, when you see our players getting criticized. And I know we got, you know, a little bit of a sample of it with some of the comments that Genie come out with recently. But, like, I absolutely don't sort of get, like, why you'd want to go on and slag a player at your own club who, you know, it's so counterproductive in my view. So, yeah, I mean, I've stopped. Like, Twitter was the last sort of social media platform that I joined. I cannot be arsed going any further beyond into Instagram, into TikTok, into anything like that, because I've had enough of Twitter. That's enough for me.
Kev O'Sullivan, I am Pat Mustard. He's not me milkman. That's all I'm saying. Right. Where do we go with that? Look, I think social media is what it is. The beauty of being my age now, I'm mid-40s, and it's fantastic, right? Because I'm now at the age where I can officially start not even bothering with anything new that comes out. Think everything is terrible and not understand how anything works anymore, and just look at them and go, what are those kids doing? Like, what's that for? Right? Like,
TikTok.
Yeah, like this. Like, so to go back to your point, Andy, think about when you went onto Twitter first, right? And all the stuff that you got up to. Okay, you were just hanging around a bit longer. I remember when I went on to 2010, 2011, and all the stuff that went on then is going on now. It's just when you're around something for so long, it just becomes boring and repetitive. And it's just you you're not involved in the stuff that goes on anymore. So now you're watching it repeat itself over and over again. And when you've seen it, it's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, do you know what I mean? So from my point of view, I use Twitter because you get access to breaking information quicker than normal mainstream media, right? So I binned off my own account. I've no interest in followers or how many followers I have or anything like that. And I just kept an account so as that I could push what hopefully is the new show that's coming out in September, and also to keep an eye on events that's going on, right? I deleted Facebook because that thing is horrific. It's full of just weirdos and people who like angels and mad people, right? So like that's just for the bin. My eldest kids have TikTok. I've no idea what that's about, right? I've tried to take it off them and then they sneak it back on. So I don't know what it, like, I don't understand TikToks. If somebody could explain TikTok to me, that would be amazing, because I've no idea what's going on. And then after
Phil, you know, when you quit Twitter, you know, you're back on your mad new account, right? But when you quit it for a while, did it enhance your enjoyment of football? Did you find yourself coming up with your own opinions? What was going on at Twitter dominating what your thoughts were in terms of, like, and since you come back on Twitter, does it enhance the enjoyment of supporting football or not?
You do realize you're talking to Phil here, don't you, Andy?
Maybe I'm asking the wrong person.
When I went off Twitter and at that stage, Andy, I'd already sort of binned off paying any attention to people's opinions on Twitter, because to be totally honest with you, if you have to go and rely on somebody else for an opinion, then you should go out and buy all the Nike jerseys in the world. That's because it's like you'll be fighting lions and tigers next and thinking you can beat them. Because honestly, if you can't make up your own opinion about what's there and back your own opinion to what you believe it to be, then you don't need somebody to tell you. Honestly, and that's the one thing that worries me about social media is you should be able to, as you're growing up, you should be able to build the ability to form your own opinion and not and let people listen to all the things that are out there and form your own opinion around things, right? Because your opinion is not more important than anyone else's.
Come here, listen, I know, look, totally. But like you said there, listen to all the things around you and form your opinion. You can't say you're not influenced by the words of others who are speaking on the exact same subject matter as you are all the time. So if you're on Twitter, within your circle of followers or who you follow, they start to form or influence in your opinion. You can't say they don't. It's just interesting when you start talking Liverpool with somebody who's not on Twitter. Mm. It's a different kettle of fish. Mm. You can't say, Jesus, like, that's got in my head.
I think what you have to remember is
thing about, like, the obsession with signings and all. It's got so ridiculous now.
You know, but Andy, do you understand that the fundamental basis of social media is to gamify what's going on, okay? So every time, so you do something and everyone agrees with you, you get loads of retweets. The idea of the retweets is that it becomes such a, it's an addictive type of cycle that you go, oh, this is great, and then you want more, and you want more likes, and you want more retweets, and you want the interaction that goes on.
Yeah.
But going back, the idea that you then should lead or influence people, I just don't get it. I don't understand it. So when I went off and came back to it, it wasn't because I wanted to come back to what it was before. My timeline, I don't pay attention to most of the Liverpool stuff that's on there. honestly, I'm looking to see when a story breaks or people that I trust that gets information that's on there. That's what I'm looking. I'm not going into what's there. So when you talk about the good, the bad and ugly, interestingly enough, I find the bad is the lads who are still preaching the same message they've been preaching for the last 6 to 7 to 8 years, which I just don't listen to anymore. I've parted over there and occasionally something comes up on the timeline and I laugh and say, what year is it, 2012, 2013? All right. It's like it's the same thing. So it's about choosing what you want in your feed. And I agree with you. I hate the echo chamber thing, but it's just, I think it's part and parcel of everyday life now. It's just you have to choose the media that you're interested in. So don't bin it off. Just freshen up your timeline so you get what you want out of it.
No, I'm just gonna. I've decided I'm gonna just block loads of accounts this season. I'm gonna create a lovely little happy clappy echo chamber for myself, and I can't wait. It's gonna be great. Top Reds,
FC,
all over the shop. Yeah.
P, you've had real media and social media and all that type of stuff. Where, for you, is it essential? If it was all deleted tomorrow, would you miss it? Would you miss the interaction?
No, and it's funny, Phil. I think we talked about this today or yesterday. I miss CFAX page 302. Anyone of a certain age, like some of us here, remember going on CFAX all hours of the night, waiting for 302 to click through the 5 or 6 pages, and that was literally your Bible. If CFAX page 302 said it, that was the fact. You waited until match of the day at 10:30 or 5 to 11 on a Saturday night, and sometimes you didn't know the results of the games. I really, really missed that. I missed the innocence of it. I missed the lack of agenda. I miss terribly just the, you know, the John Motsons, the romance of all that. Picking up even the back page of a newspaper, being 11 or 12 years of age on the way to school and looking at, you know, news and not having a clue. Again, no agenda, just this is what's going on. And I miss that. Nowadays, you know, you're reading a Twitter feed, you've got this guy called Schwarzkopf, you've got, you know, all these in the nose in the echo chamber. And then you've got, you know, Messi making his big announcement at the weekend, crying into his fake crocodile tears. You're asked to have an opinion subliminally about that. I miss the days when I had no opinion on these footballers or their motivations. I just flicked on CFAX page 302. And that told me what I really wanted to know. And then I waited for the players to go to the top of the league, the top scorers. I'd wait for that. You know, Sheringham, Wright, Shearer, you know, Ferdinand. I miss the simplicity of that. And you know what it did for you? It made you paint a picture in your head, if you didn't get to see that game, of what was actually going on. Mm. You know, people, it might sound a little bit airy-fairy, but I miss exactly, there you go. I miss the imagination. I remember one season as a kid, a fella called Guy Whittingham left the army, in the British Army. Portsmouth paid 50 grand to get him out of the army, and he scored 40 goals in the second division. And I remember thinking, that's magic. What a story that is. If that happened nowadays, there'd be all sorts of fellas from the right, all sorts of fellas from the left, talking about how he's a deserter and he hates his country. It didn't fucking matter. It didn't matter. It just mattered that it was a great story and he scored a load of goals. I miss that. Nowadays, everybody has, it's like you said, it's gamifying, you know, reality. Why do we have to have an opinion on absolutely everything? Why can't we just look at the magic of some things that just happen and go, isn't that deadly?
I mean, I'm not expecting a comment up there.
Do you remember the club calls used to kill you? And actually,
that was Owen Burke's story anyway, and he's sticking to it.
He was calling a different type
of number, but anyway,
it took a while to get the club calls onto. I don't even know if it was on CFAX. I think that was on Teletext, on ITV's Teletext.
Oh, it was in the newspaper.
It was in the newspaper as well.
It was in the newspaper, and look, I was always ringing them. The start of it was like 10 times as long as our intro, and it'd be like, din, din, din. Welcome to Liverpool fan chat.
There you go.
Look at two or three minutes into the call, like, you know, and 10 pound down. You still haven't got any transfer info. And then eventually, some guy like we go, hello, Liverpool. Not signing anyone today.
Well, look at that. Look at that. Look at the graphic that's up there now. I guarantee you that you would be able, I know I can, you'd be able to go through all of those names and tell me who they are and tell me something about them. Today, there's so much information available, so many. The names are just coming and going. Andy Saville, Birmingham, John Aldridge, David Kelly, Gary Blissett at Brentford, Guy Whittingham, Chris Kiwamia, Paul Warhorse, Brian Dean, David White at Manchester City.
Craig. You're just craving a simpler time. Everyone that looks back, if you talk to your dad now, when I talked to him, they didn't have CFAX. They used to have the pink pages that you get on a Saturday, right? And this is what they used to have. And he even goes, oh, I used to love getting the paper on a Saturday to find out what happened. They didn't even have CFAX. Like, they didn't know what was going on. They used to wait till the last edition of the paper came out to find out what the scores were from around the place. Like, God knows what they could have made up. 312 was the page on CFAX that you got all your transfer gossip on. That was transfer whisper.
So you were the kid that waited for it to go. I just went to 302 and I waited till about 305 because after that was the goal scorers. And then the graphic up there, I wanted to see who was number one in the charts. Because again, we got our chart position on a Sunday evening in a car on the way from Birmingham to London. But now the lads that are making music know their chart positions at midnight on the Saturday night because they're getting all sorts of notifications directly from the record companies. You used to have to wait. I mean, this is 2003. You used to have to wait, what the rest of the country knew your chart position. Just people, we have an obsession with instant information. And I just think it's taken everything. It's taken everything from it. It's taken the whole, so much so it's that not, people have an obsession.
It's not. And the reason why I'm saying it's not, it's everything progresses. It's like when I turn, and I genuinely mean it when I say I don't get some of the new forms of social media, but I'm not meant to. I'm too old for it. Like I've passed by. My dad used to look at teletext and go, what the fuck are you looking at? Why are you reading that stuff? It's in the paper. It's like he didn't get that transfer gossip, that 312 transfer gossip was, I didn't have to buy all the papers. I used to get it in one page, and he was like baffled at this. He was even like, how do you even get this magic stuff? Where's the television gone? Like it never dawned on them that there was a button that would allow you to read this stuff. This is what the internet has become.
I bet you Val Casey knows more about football and remembers more about football than you or I. I bet you a pound to a penny he'd be able to remember more. The problem is information tossed at us. And you're forgetting the magic. You're forgetting all of the stuff that made it fun. Do you know what I mean?
Val would be able to tell you stuff about what made it magic was your age. What made it magic is your age. And it's your formative years. You're seven, you're from the ages of 12 to about 20. Teletext was the place. Was 140 on ITV's teletext. That was the football pages, and I think it was 152 or 151 was the transfer gossip section on ITV. And for us in Ireland, we had Airtel, which was Airtel, and then Airtext, which was shocking. It was the worst thing ever. But 220 was their football pages on that, and you'd have to go to 228 to get the transfer gossip. That included League of Ireland stuff as well. And we'd be like, I don't care who's going to Shamrock Rovers. I want to know, is Paul Stewart signing for Liverpool or not? So this is this is the thing. But go back to your point. The start of the season, as this stuff comes up, right, because transfer windows didn't exist back then. So this is, if you think about it, and Andy, it sort of leads back to your point around social media. But this is the key point of the season where you literally have lads who should be in summer camps, but you can't go into summer camps when you're in secondary school, on Twitter with a handle like Klopp Love LFC 123456, right, and is lashing out because they know all the stuff that's going on, and it's just there to drive you mad, and they'll jump on anyone who might give them nice follows and nice likes. So it's just an extension of all that type of stuff. Now, 338 wasn't the BBC gossip, it was 312. I'm 100% sure about 312. I pressed it enough times as a kid. Like, it was there. Who have we signed? And you wait for the page to go and then it come back again. And have we signed anyone? Yeah, I didn't have one. Ray, you're in England. You've invented teletext. So,
It was brilliant.
Do you still Absolutely have it there brilliant. In the shed?
You know, It's on the NTL box, but not on Cumbria.
That's a feature on the NTL box.
It is a feature on the NTL box, yeah, it is.
Oh, look at that. That's a cracker. Do you remember playing that? Bamboozle.
No, go on.
It was a game on ITV, Teletext, or Channel 4 or whatever. It was a load of deadly games, yeah. Yeah. Quality.
No, I mean... The whole sort of teletext era, I mean, I would sit there for the whole kind of, you know, 3 o'clock till 10 to 5, whatever time the game's finished, just like watching this, because the way it would work would obviously be half the games would be on one page and then it would flick onto like page two. So it kept flicking between, and you were just hoping that that next page, you know, update for the Liverpool game would be like, you know, Liverpool score. Fuck. I mean, thinking back, you know, like it was crazy sitting there for that amount of time, sort of thing, waiting for scores to update. But yeah, the innocence, and you know, like in some ways, you know, I have young kids now, and they're going to grow up, and they're going to obviously live in a completely different era where information is at their fingertips. But oh God, I mean, just back onto Owen Burke's comments there. I mean, you know, about it was either ringing the club line or listen to some R1 on the other end of the phone. My nan actually had to put a lock. You know, I don't know if anyone had the old...
Well, because Wayne Rooney kept ringing her.
So that none of my uncles could actually use the phone at home. That's how bad it got when she started getting her phone bills and these numbers were coming out for those types of
God.
As the season begins to kick off, lads, if there's one thing you could bring back from the 90s, what would it be? One thing each, so you can't get greedy now. One thing.
You go first, I go first. For me, not hating other teams, like going back to these simpler times, I didn't hate anyone. I was interested in every team. You kind of had a sneaky look. I only hated Man United, and I didn't even understand why I hated them that much, to be honest with you. Not hating anyone else. I miss just enjoying football. Like, for example, putting on... Nowadays, if I flick on the television, and we've so many channels now, that if Manchester United are on or Manchester City are on, I won't watch it. Whereas years ago, any football, I would watch it. I miss being like that. I miss being a fan of just the game in general. I find myself... I fucking hate Manchester City, and I hate Manchester United, and I don't like that about myself, because it's good to watch football. This is supposed to be our sport, and I miss that. I miss the simple times for that. So I'd go back to the 90s for the fact that I didn't hate anyone, to be honest with you. I kind of liked everybody, you know.
Andy,
give me those days when football was romantic, and you'd slum it on the way over to Liverpool on the B&I ferry. You'd be puking all the way over. You'd be puking all the way home. You never had to worry about getting a ticket. You were in there onto the cop standing. The atmosphere always, like, you always remember being great for every game. So that's, these days, look, we are talking about Twitter and CFAX. Like, will our kids be saying, you know, in 20 years time, oh, do you remember, like, the great days where you'd be pulling down on Twitter to see what someone is abusing Linda with, you know what I mean? Like, will they do the good old days? How shit is it going to get? Bad.
Yeah. Teddy, you're right, and you're so right.
Yeah, she was sharing some charity thing the other day about, you know, it was something about helping people in a community in Liverpool, like some really worthy cause. And all the replies, like, this is the weird thing about it. Like, you think, I remember, there'd be like 90% to be decent comments, but now the replies to things like that are dominated by lunatics, like by weirdos. All tell your husband to buy a player, get this. Like, what the fuck is wrong with people? Like, I really do think it's just got that bad, particularly in the last year. Maybe it's COVID has really dumbed people down or something, but it's just bananas, you know what I mean?
Agree.
Ron Dicko, what would you bring back?
Well, I miss it. It kind of flies in the face of what I'm going to discuss in a little while, but I do miss being able to just rock up to the ground, you know, queue up, pay on the gate, go and watch the match, as Andy says, stand on the cop, and then And then one of the things that I used to do religiously was I used to go to the same chippy on the way home, and I used to pay 63 pence for a sausage dinner. And it was a fucking day and a half, I tell you. You're like, who needed booze back in them days? You know what I mean?
The one thing I'd bring back, if we could, just one thing, right? Because this is where my real love of this type of football comes from, and this engrossment of football is. If we could bring Gazzetta Football Italia back, right? Because it always started 2 weeks before the start of the season. And they do an update on all the transfers that happened in Italy, all the new players that were coming in. And James Richardson would do interviews with the sort of whatever random English lad had been sold to an Italian team.
He doesn't look any older, by the way. He's doing well, isn't he?
He's definitely, he's definitely on the Tom Brady diet to where he's breaking age. But yeah, I'd bring back Gazzetta Football Italia. It was definitely the formative thing through the 90s for me in terms of what I believed football media should look like. And to be fair, it became a template for so much of what we now see today in terms of how these programs are broadcast, essentially as magazines. And that was a magazine. If you think of Shoot and you think of Match Grown Up, and even the likes of 442, Gazzetta Football Italia was essentially a visual magazine that you got on a weekly basis before the live match that happened on Sunday. And it became the template that you saw Spanish football on Sky, you saw then even the English football become, and then BT tried to redo that when it came as well. So that would be the one thing I bring back from the 90s. Saint Degrees is a great show as well.
You mentioned Shoot there, Phil. The one thing that I used to do season in, season out, is used to have those tables where you had the little sort of pop-out team names, and then every week you'd get the paper on the Sunday, and then you would, you know, copy what the table looked like. I was actually amazed. I was round at my nephew's house the other day, and they're still doing it. He has got the latest table there, getting it all set up. I mean, fair play for that to keep going after all of those years.
Round the cheese said Euro Trash, or somebody said Euro Trash. Yeah, I agree. We need to bring Euro Trash back as well, just for the young lads coming up to see what life is really all about. Go on, Andy, what were you going to say?
I just remembered something, you know, when you had posters. So I remember years and years ago, before, like, as I was only really getting into Liverpool, like when I was sort of 6 or 7, putting posters up. And I knew like Johnson played for Liverpool. And just to impress me older brother, I put a poster of Mo Johnson on the wall of Rangers, thinking that was Craig Johnson. And he came home and goes, "What the fuck is that?" Like, he probably won't even remember. I was like, "Johnson." Yeah. And he was going, "That's not Craig Johnson, that's Mo Johnson. Rangers legend."
the Graham Souness connection is cracking.
Some great shouts come in there. Lolo Ferrari is one that they bring back from the 90s. Panini sticker books, Transworld Sport, Joseph Ankel. Yeah, that was a great shout that was there. The Kellogg's reflectors for the spokes in the back of your boxes. Norman, I'll give you that one that was in my head as well. The Ward, Terry Christian and Danny Bear. But I also blame the Ward on dumbing down humanity in general, or English people in general, because as much as it was great fun to look back at, that is social media. And if you want to go out and watch the Ward, and that's essentially social media. There was like, it's the maddest eclectic mix of mad stuff. There was like serious topics, and then there'd be a fella lying in a tin of beans, rubbing himself with a dog or something like that. So like,
the first time I seen a lot of bands that I like, the first time I ever seen Sepultura in my life, they put, I never seen the Ward done this. They, I think it was Terry Christian and Mark Lamar. They put a load of Sepultura fans in a cage, and they put the band outside the cage. I remember thinking it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And by the way, that band is deadly. And from then on, I just had just loads of heavy metal t-shirts. So for me, the Ward, yeah, you're right. But what it did is it gave you an instant message, and it was almost like, you think this is cool now. And it kind of worked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was Nirvana. I remember Nirvana and the Ward. I remember Oasis playing the Ward. These bands often had their first big scene. It moved on from what was the old Grey Whistle stop or the old Grey Whistle test on BBC and BBC Two stuff as well. Or also, would you bring back the rave scene from the 90s back to now? Very hard to, because things, again, there was a naivety, but there was also a pureness that's there. You can't just take what happened then and bring it into now, because so many things have changed and everything is a product of the time that it exists in. But do I love the rave scene from the 90s? 100%. I lived this and it was a great time. And that's all I'm going to say. It was a fantastic time.
There's nothing like reliving those dance fucking tunes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's right.
Come here, and the Joe Bloggs jeans, and the Eclipse tops, and the many other things. Mm-hmm. Actually, Andy, I think we're going to do some night where there's an international week. Let's do a nostalgia only show where we'll take something from the 90s. We'll take the 90s as a generation. We'll lash up pictures of Joe Bloggs jeans and Eclipse and lads with masks on before you had to wear masks into the shops. Mm-hmm.
I hate international football so much that I want to talk about Joe Bloggs jeans and the Inspired Carpets for an hour.
Lashing the Vicks inside just as you're going into paint the house.
What I think of it, right, this sausage dinner for 63 pence.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, apart from sausages, what was in it? Like, why was it called? exactly did you get?
Well, the chippy was called George's, and it was just a little, it was about five 10-minute walk from Anfield. I think it was on Priory Road. And you got two sausages, chips, peas, and onion gravy, and the standard going rate at that time for that type of thing was probably about 150. But this place was cooking them out for like 63 pence. It was unbelievable. I don't know how he was doing it. I don't know if it was a front or whatever. An old couple, but it was the absolute business.
Yes, Norman. Snickers should be called. Yes, Norman.
I remember being over in Liverpool when we were teenagers, and there was a couple of us, and the biggest mate I had, Bordy, big lad, and we were getting the chipper, and some fella came over and turned 6'2" Bordy upside down and took all his money. Then I think of like scary things, Liverpool, when we were growing up.
Right, all I know is that if you came out nowadays into WhatsApp and said there's a great place to get a sausage dinner, you definitely won't be getting this response as Andy's just giving you just there. And I don't think Gav would be able to put any pictures up that would be sent in relating to the sausage dinner. I'll talk about sausage dinners. Big Ron Dicko, you were over in you've just come back from Brookside Close recently. Gav, if you're still alive there, you listen. It's time to bring up Ray Dicko's topic, which of course is the recent Anfield ticketing. Well, could be seen in some parts as a fiasco, and in other parts, it could be just seen as the necessary steps when you need to fundamentally change how you're doing your ticketing arrangements, particularly in a post-COVID environment. So,
I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, Ron.
A good Scouse moan here.
I know you're upset about this, and you may not have been allowed on the trains at the weekend. You were that angry about it. So, come on. What's bugging you?
I honestly put this up without really sort of seeing too much about it. Obviously, the delay kickoff was the first sort of sign that all was not well with the whole NFC ticketing arrangement. And I looked at some videos today, and honestly, like, I've got a ticket for the first game against Burnley, and nothing irritates me more than queuing unnecessarily for stuff, like, just generally in life. And when I seen the video today of, you know, the length of the queue to get in to the ground, like I'm going to be fucking, like, by the time I'm going to be, like, I may as well not go if the state I'll be in when I get in the ground, if I'm going to be stuck at the back of a queue like that I've seen. Like, you know, the head of, or the VP of ticketing, Phil, he's come out today, and, you know, he's almost said, like, this was almost like a plan to see, you know, kind of stress test or whatever, see how see how badly or how well things went, sort of thing. And the thing that made me laugh is they made it sound like almost like there was the reason why they had games on consecutive days, you know, was because they wanted to see how this thing, you know, operated and learn lessons. Now that's to me, that's a bit of a nonsense. Have a game, you then have a little bit of time to learn the lessons, and then you implement them on the, you know, 5 days a week later. So I think that was an utter nonsense to turn around and say that this was almost, and this was one of the reasons why we're having consecutive game, like days, you know, consecutive days, games on consecutive days. Like, they've had plenty of time. They introduced this technology last season. And okay, albeit there was only, you know, 6,000, 8,000, there must have been issues at that point, similar to what happened over the course of those 2 days. But like, come on, like, it's amateur hour. Like, they surely should have introduced something that had been proven to work elsewhere. So like, they. From my point of view, they better have learned the lessons from what's happened over the last 2 days. As I understand things, they have actually set up like a test turnstile. So you can rock up any time between now and when the first home game's on. You can go, you can test that the technology is working in terms of you've downloaded your ticket. You can go and test that it'll work. So, okay, they've obviously got a little bit of a plan there. Hopefully people who can get down to Anfield between now and the first game against Burnley will do that. But my God, if I get to that game with half an hour to go and the queue, you know, from where I'm sitting on the cop is all the way round to the Annie Road, I'll be having some serious words. And you know what? I might have to just rock up looking like that. I'm guaranteeing that I skip the queue.
Are you gonna bring Tin Ed with you?
Yeah,
he's a
serious likeness, hasn't he? Tin Ed to Gareth Roberts. So, you know, we know Gareth Roberts likes the rant. And the, you know, he's not good friends with Merseyrail at the moment. So we might go mob handed and make sure that we get in and have no bother at the turnstiles in a couple of weeks.
Can I ask you though, like, was those two games though? It is what I said. Was that not to drive out the issues that they need to resolve prior to?
No, it wasn't. It was the reason there was two games in consecutive days, as I understand it, is because that's what Jürgen wanted from a footballing point of view. It was absolutely nothing to do with stress test and ticketing. So I think that's a lot of bluster. I think that's kind of a made-up-y statement, you know, that sort of behind all
it's
of that.
Convenient. So, we're going to make mistakes.
Very cynical.
I'd be sort of more on the club side here. Like, I think that there was a lot of moaning for moaning's sake. People are moaning that they couldn't get into the ground. People are moaning that they couldn't go to matches, right? And everyone knew that this post-COVID environment, there was going to be queues and it was going to take longer to get into the ground. Everyone got into the ground. They delayed the kickoff. They won't be able to delay for when the Premiership starts. But it does mean that people have to arrive potentially an hour before kickoff to make sure that they're in time. Andy, yeah. from your point of view, did you think it was a bit of a mountain made over molehill?
Absolutely. Listen, start coming to the ground an hour early and get the atmosphere going. When the players came out for warm, the ground was half empty. If people had it turned up a bit earlier, listen, I can totally sympathise with something like that. When you're introducing new technology, you're going to have human error. You're going to have people on the gates that are unfamiliar with the new systems and that are going to take a bit of getting used to. You're going to have people coming up who can't get their phones to work. Look, I remember the first time I started using pay by phone. It takes your first couple of goals to, you know what I mean, to get used to it. It's going to be the same for fans coming up that never use pay by phone. You know what I mean? It's a new system. You have to have patience with something like that. People should be glad that we're back in Anfield now. I couldn't give a shit if I was queuing for an hour. Going up to the gates in fucking Disneyland, you're standing there for about an hour to use entry by phone technology, and people are having absolute nightmares as well, and then they have to stand aside. You get through and you have a great day in Disneyland. It's going to be the same at Anfield this season. There was a 30-minute delay in the first game, 15-minute delay in the second game. Come the Burnley game, there's going to be no delay. Everybody's going to be getting inside, and people are on their high horse, giving it socks about it. Like, what is the problem? Like, what is the story? Absolutely losing their minds over having the queue. It's going to be grand. We're going to have a great season. We're going to win side Anfield, and we're going to see the team bounce off every team all season, and we're going to win the league. Fuck it. You queued for fucking 20 minutes or half an hour of pre-season game. Come on.
The difference the other night, the difference, it was unbelievable. And you see what it means to the players. I mean, you talked about, in fairness, you were consistently talking about it last season. You know, there was a huge, huge factor. But for me, you know, in particular, you know, it's like a different, not just player, different human being. His whole demeanor. Listen, I don't care if we don't sign nobody. Don't need anybody. Really, I looked at that. I know it's only Osasuna, but forget about them. We just look quicker, sharper, you know, just full of it. And it's
enjoying ourselves. The key to Klopp's teams is people enjoying themselves, players enjoying themselves, expressing their football, working hard. And that's what I think we've seen over them two friendlies back at Anfield with a almost full house. Fuck the tickets. You won't even be talking about Keown to get in come that game, Ray.
Can I just say, just on a positive note, though, in terms of those two friendlies, because I don't know how well it was really kind of put out there, but the club played blinded, to be honest, because the tickets were being sold, obviously not at the normal kind of rates for a normal league game. But if you bought an adult ticket, you got a child ticket free. So it was an absolutely brilliant initiative by the club to be able to allow families to go and enjoy a game. Like, it might be pre-season, but if you're bringing an 8-year-old or, you know, a 10-year-old to their first experience of Anfield, doesn't matter whether it's a pre-season game or, you know, a Champions League semi-final. Like, that's just a memory forever for those kids, and it gets them in, and hopefully that will continue for future pre-seasons, that the club recognise that, you know, we need the next generation coming through. And, you know, as much as there was a lot of negativity about, you know, fiasco and whatnot, like, I didn't, you know, as usual, it's the negative out there, but, like, that was a big positive. It really was a big positive to be able to take your kid along for nothing and let them enjoy the first experience of Anfield, you know. And
Chris, I think the link back to social media, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah, exactly. And it's usually the ugly that's put out there first. But Chris Brack is saying, and in some ways, you know, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, a lot of this does come down to individuals. And it's not always the individual's fault. They may be unfamiliar with this type of technology. But as I understand it, it is, you know, if you go away with, you know, Ryanair or whatever, and you put your boarding pass into your wallet in your iPhone, it's the same kind of principle, essentially. But it was a lot of people who weren't, you know, who were rocking up to the game and expecting just to get in because they've bought a ticket and not actually following the instructions. So hopefully people realize, having done what has happened over the last couple of days, that there's a certain level of, you know, responsibility on yourself to actually do what needs to be done to get in the ground. You know what I mean? Instead of expecting other people to do it for you by rocking up and not having anything to get into the ground with.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I was talking about the good on Twitter. Like, look, there's Chris Brack's story. I've seen so many videos shared of people that got the opportunity to bring their kids to Anfield for the first time. And it's quality. Like, I mean, that's the good that kind of Twitter brings. Loads of videos of people back in the ground with their kids and all sitting together. Amazing.
And maybe we'll get to see some celebrities in Nike gear, because they all have the queue. They can come in the VIP entry. They could have the I don't know. I actually don't know I don't know any celebrities. Okay, I was thinking earlier on, do I know any actors, famous actors at this stage? And I don't, right? I'm at the point in my life where I recognize, you know, and say, I recognize a man. And she goes, yeah, what was he in? No idea, but I know who he, I don't know who he is. I don't know his name is. I just know the character's name in this show that we're watching, and that's it.
Look, I'm useless. I see people, what was he in? And then she'd go, well, you used to work with him years ago.
That's what it was. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, so hopefully the celebrities turn up in the new Nike gear. Now, lads, before we go, there's been a bit of criticism that we didn't talk football tonight. Can I just apologize? No, I won't. Don't talk football. Go. Don't care. Is there anything else you just want to have a quick yatter about before we close up here? And
well, I think that comment, you should have read out that comment. That was a good comment.
Which one was that?
Just about Klopp looking fresh.
Yeah, to be fair. Know, yeah, 79 T-Ball says Klopp looks fresh. Huge positive. He's had a horrific year and it's great to have him back. And it is, to be fair, he looks definitely... But can I just say, in general, looking at those friendly matches, and I've never won since Klopp's come in, I always get excited by the last friendly game because I always think that's the one that gives us the biggest idea of how fast and everyone is up, right? I think it's great. I think it was great to see the whole squad, and I'm talking about the big players. I'm talking Sadio Mane. He looks ready to go for the season. Salah looks like he's already in unbelievable form. Bobby was definitely rejuvenated by what's going on. Ox flying around the pitch. I was delighted to see Ox. Now, I don't think he's durable. I don't think he can be relied on over the period of time. But the whole lot of them, to even see the performances that Gomez and Van Dijk have managed to put in, given the size of their injuries and coming back, look at Tsimikas, looks a different player. I think we cannot underestimate the impact. And I know we've laughed and scoffed at this, but a full pre-season for the majority of this squad is going to have for what they're going to do, and also the full break. The only worry I have, again, is the African Nations Cup with potentially losing Mane and Salah for a few weeks. I know it's only two
games, is it?
Yeah, I know, but it's the travelling, Andy. It's that on top of the Christmas schedule, and then you have this thing, and then the intensive period, and then they come back, and you just hope they don't pick up an injury or something, because it's like lashing the Euros into the middle of the season, where lads are playing games on a Monday and a Wednesday and a Friday and a Sunday. You know, the way it's just, it's that's my only concern, but... Isn't it great? And I have to say, and I just want a quick thing just to close out. Seeing a player like Minamino, now he could be sold tomorrow, he could be loaned out tomorrow, but lads, seeing a player like Minamino last night, he looked like that, the way Robertson took a few weeks. Remember Robertson needed that
months, he took
three or four months.
Half a season.
Minamino looked a different player yesterday to the one that we'd seen play for us, and the one that was even out on loan with Southampton. And I was delighted. I honestly think, I said to you yesterday in the group, I said, he just reminds me so much of Benny Young. From what I saw on the pitch there, he just reminds me so much of Benny Young. Anyone like that that's really impressed you, Ron, before the season kicks off?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about the whole Tsimikas situation. In some ways, like this scenario now probably is perfect in that he just slots in as the left back to start the season, as opposed to coming in and trying to, you know, prove himself, you know, maybe 8-10 games into a season when the team may be already sort of in a particular position. I think this is great for him. I was really impressed with him yesterday. I mean, like... he obviously knew, off the back of Robertson's injury that he's got an opportunity, and he looked like a man who realises that this is like a massive thing that he needs to grasp, you know, with both hands. So Tsimikas, I think, is going to do a great job. I think it'll do him the world of good. Obviously, we expect Robbo to come back for 6 games in, whatever it is, but at least we have then a player who's got his confidence back up, because it must have been shot to pieces after what went on last season. Bobby looks sharp. You know, he's had a bit of a break. He's had a bit of a mental break. He's obviously one who loves the crowds. Was said so many times on this podcast. I just think generally, quickly on the transfers. You know, a lot of people be losing the shit over the next couple of weeks about, you know, lack of signings.
Don't care.
I'm completely happy with us going to war with this squad now. I'm as comfortable with a squad as I've been in a long time, knowing that if we have to have players come in for a few games, that they're more than capable of doing a job. And I can see us going very close to winning this league, if not winning it next season.
Pete?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, totally agree with Ray. I think anybody that comes in, they shouldn't expect to be anywhere near the 11 for a while. So I don't care who comes in, to be honest with you. I look at Konate and I see a player who, when that boy opens his stride to run, just get out of his way. He looks like, but as well as having that awesome presence, he can pass a ball. My Jesus, he understands the weight of a football. I didn't expect that. I didn't think he had that in his locker. As well as there's a lot of players that you'll see in your life or that you've played against even that are big but don't understand the size of their own body. So they don't win headers. They don't outpower people. They're just big. He seems to have a complete understanding of his own body at 21, which is very unusual. I seen him come out of the fence a couple of times last night, and it was literally, you could see lads kind of going, yeah, I'm not standing in the way of that. And then, as I said, his range of passing is excellent. I think some of the youngfellas, very impressed with the youngfella that kind of knocked on the door a couple of years ago, Woodburn. I thought he looks to me like he has more football in his legs than he did the last time we saw him. I think it's a bit of a stretch to expect him anything out of him. But a couple of the really young kids, I think, done well. Young Gordon looks a player. I mean, as soon as he learns his awareness and positioning, he's going to be a player, because his spatial awareness is not that great. He's not great with the all offside. He just needs to learn that little bit. My God, what an athlete. It's nice to see Matip involved, to be honest with you. I won't say anything. And he we shall not name, who we've written off for the last, this will be his fourth season, even he looks like he can contribute. And he has, in fairness, he's played three or four preseason games in a row. Usually his knee is torn to Weetabix by game 1.5. And Bobby, like I said, I always think Bobby reminds me of Freddie Mercury. You know, I'd say he's the worst rehearser in the world. He can't rehearse. But when the people come in, he's just there, to be honest with you. People, I laugh at people having a go at him. He doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. But my God, he was just untouchable last night. You know, long may it continue. I don't care who comes in, who doesn't. Yeah, I really don't.
Okay, look, for the first time and the only time this season, just for a bit of nostalgia, because we did about teletext and CFAX and the whole lot. Predictions for the weekend. Ray Dicko, predictions. Give me. Do we beat Norwich? And if so, what's the score and who scores?
Comfortably, 4-0. 4-0. I think we'll see Salah get a couple, Mane, and possibly Bobby. It'd be interesting who he goes with. You know, obviously you would expect that he wouldn't play Jota as well as the other three lads, but maybe he'll surprise us. I don't know.
Peace.
Yeah, I think 3-0. Norwich will do their usual. They'll come and try and play football, which I never understand why.
It's away.
Yeah. It's away. No, but as I said, it doesn't matter. We could play them on the moon and we'd still beat them 3-0. You know, so for me, we win 3-0. And I think Salah, again, everyone forgets that he's just the most lethal weapon we have. 2 for Salah, 1 for Mane, 3-0. Comfortable.
Andrew.
Yeah, I think we can see it. I don't think, you know, especially at the start of the season, things will be a bit frantic. So I think we can see it. I don't think we'll see a really rock solid Liverpool for a while, especially until Van Dijk really finds himself again. Robertson will be a miss, as good as Simicass has been in pre-season. So I think we probably can see it. But I'm going to go for 5-2 to Liverpool.
5-2. Yeah, you don't miss people against Norwich City.
Listen, I think we're gonna see a Liverpool that is gonna be a bit more enjoyable to watch this season. New approach, hungry, a bit of a delay from last season, well, the way we should have been. So the players have a lot, not a lot to prove is probably the wrong word, but they'll want to prove things, you know, speak up. You know, Ray is saying that we'll run the league close. I think we'll win the league. You know, City have spent 100 million there in Grealish, but they've, you know, they've lost players like Aguero. And I think Bernardo, who's kind of fallen off a cliff in the last season or two, was more effective than Grealish will be for them.
Players won out, Andy. You know, what we're seeing there is almost the opposite of, I think, what we're getting at Liverpool now. Like, we're talking about our squad, you know, the harmony that's within the squad. I think City, I think Pep's hanging on, like, you know.
Yeah, Champions League final defeat is a bigger deal than anybody realises for them. Mm. I think that scares me.
I mean, they won the league last year to, you know, an empty stadium all season and, like, you know, without being challenged.
No pressure.
They didn't look like they were enjoying themselves. It wasn't a really, really impressive City that people are going to be talking about. And I think Pep is on the verge of a meltdown. You know, he was only pressed a simple question about the money they paid for Grealish. And already snapping. Like,
yeah.
So, with a good form, Klopp, that's where the edge is. You're probably going to see Chelsea being good this season, you know, because they showed signs of it last year as a full season with their manager now. No, this is our season now again, in my opinion.
Okay, we won, I think, 4-2 against them the last time we won the league in the opening day of the season. So
Wasn't it?
No, Pukki scored two towards the two consolation goals against the end.
We went on a bit of a run.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful that we get the win as we'd like to see thing. I think it'll be tighter, probably a 2-1 in my opinion. It's away from home. They won't overcommit themselves. I think they're struggling with injuries and probably just stack the box and hope to try play us in the break. They might get, well, I think we might go 2-0 up and then they get one back towards the end and it just gives us that little bacon slicer bum to go towards the end of the game. But just getting the 3 points is the main thing. I'm delighted to see the fraud has been cut out again in terms of his thing. He's spending 500 billion euros on a team and people still think he's the best manager to ever live. It's a bit like Messi going to PSG. What's the point? He should have gone to Napoli or something like that and actually done something with his career as opposed to just gone to the best team.
Best managers in the world don't spend 100 million on Grealish just like that. It's just a power play. It's just everybody who's talking about Grealish. We'll go and buy him for 100 million. For that 100 million, he probably could have got 3 quality players. I know Klopp would have done that.
And that's it. So, look, it's wins all around for the four of us, even though Pete's obviously he's taken the power card out again from the room. So he's headed off there a bit early. He's clocked out a bit early.
There's loads of people asking about the fancy football code in the. In the comments, we're going to have to get whoever it was, Steve, or was it that set up the
master one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know that's not being launched again. I see there is a small group, but whoever, I think it was Steve, or might have been. So we'll get on that.
I'll have a chat to him. He's away at the moment, so I'll see if we have the code in terms of what it is. Right, so that has been the forum. Thank you all for listening along as we went through the world of Nike, moving swiftly on to social media. We never got to show the wardrobe graphic. I was very disappointed with that because I wanted to see where you wanted to go with the wardrobes. And then moved along to CFAX and nostalgia and rounded up with Ron Dicko taking a shotgun to the queues in Anfield because he's not queuing up, especially when he's going to miss out on the sausage dinner. He's not when he's missing out on a sausage dinner. Before I go tonight, I just want to remind us all about the steps for Siena. The link is being there along the bottom. Please, if you can, donate what you can. We want to fill out Anfield. We want to get that girl her operation because there's a slot for now in November and it's going well. I think they've 65,000 of the 120,000 they need to get done. So let's get there. Let's get us over the line. I want you all to remember before you go tonight, when you're going off contemplating how much you can donate, remember that in America, 1 in 10 Americans reckon they can fist fight a lion to death and an elephant and a bear, right? Like, this is just mad stuff. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight thinking about it. So that's been the forum. I've been your host, Phil Casey. Pete was, believe me, here. He's gone now. And
mystery guest number three.
This is like the reverse. Whereas, look, I can't even have the hand to go this way. There's Andy Young. There's the finger. There's Andy Young there. And below me there is Ray, Ron, Dicko, Dixon. there's loads of shows. Jamie is back at some stage when he's out of the jacuzzi from with the missus. And
from my laptop.
It is. And then there's more stuff on Thursday and Friday. And then we'll have the pre-match and the post-match show the lads are doing off the Red Sea podcast that are doing it for us. They're doing a great job as well. And that's been the show. Thanks all for listening. Thanks all for the chats. Talk to us next week.
Gav, play us out there.
Quick. Remember, you can still hear us here, Andy. Sports Social Podcast Network.